From the All-Ireland Business Foundation, this is Elaine Carl bringing you EIBF Business Talk. EIBF is an independent national body tasked with enterprise development and the promotion of best-in-class businesses as business all-stars. Today, I catch up with Jeanette De La Hunte, founder of TSK Academy Limited, founded in 2018 with a view to improving the lives of neurodiverse individuals by creating training for front-level workers and organisations in understanding complex needs. Their programmes have helped hundreds of SNAs, teachers, foster carers and other professionals in understanding complex needs and in developing strategies to manage distressing behaviours. They also offer neurodiversity consultancy and support organisational change to become more inclusive in their hiring processes and workplace cultures to accept, acknowledge and embrace neurodiverse individuals into their organisations. Thank you so much for joining me today on AIBF Business Talk, Jeanette. Jeanette, the work that you do at TSK Academy sounds extremely, extremely exciting and invigorating, especially the type of work you're doing with front-level workers. Can you share with our audience here today the work that you do so they can get a greater understanding?
Yeah, of course. And thanks for having me, Elaine. It's a pleasure. So basically what we do for the frontline workers is we provide a range of training courses. And the training courses would be more of a practical element. So they take on a little bit more practical side of things than the theory base that they're used to doing with their QQIs and their diplomas. So with the training that we do, we're teaching them about neurodiversity. We're giving them a good understanding of autism, what it is and what it isn't. A lot of people believe that if somebody engages in a behaviour, you know, a concerning behaviour, a distressing behaviour, we like to call it now. We don't really like to say challenging behaviour anymore. We've moved on from that. It's because the person is in distress and that's the reason why they're engaging in this behavior and they're trying to communicate a need with you. And a lot of the theory doesn't teach you that. So we teach you the practical side of things so that you understand where that behavior is actually coming from and what that person is trying to communicate with you so that you can get a better understanding and prevent that behavior from happening again. So that's basically what we do. We also teach about trauma-informed care. Again, it's looking at behavior and where it's coming from and what that person is actually trying to communicate with you. And we give practical strategies then for the workers that are going in so that they know how to handle it. So if they did get a slap or something happened to them, because they're not prepared for that. You do your QQIs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell you in your QQIs that you might get smacked or kicked or bitten or smeared on, which is not a nice thing to have to happen. And from somebody who's worked in that area for many years, you know, I see the amount of staff turnover that there is, and the vulnerable people are the ones that need the consistency the most. So they need you to stay and they need you to build a relationship, and you're not going to stay because you're not ready to get smack. So you need to be aware of that.
There seems to be a huge level of awareness there that's required, because I know as a parent myself, you often see, you know, kids in a supermarket or something that might have a challenging behavior, and you often wonder, you know, what is it behind it? Often, you know, there's a driver. But that's very interesting about the trauma-informed care. Can you just, I suppose, maybe shed another little bit of light on that for me?
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that have gone through a lot of adversity in their younger years, and of our generation as well. You know, it's starting to understand why we see behaviour the way that we do. So when we see somebody engaging in that, I don't know about you, but before I had children, when I saw somebody else having a meltdown in the middle of a supermarket, I'd be like, oh my God, that parent is so terrible, do you know? Mm-hmm. And then you have children, you start to understand that that's not necessarily the case. But at the end of the day, they're just trying to communicate something to you. Now, a lot of people have gone through a lot of adversity. Our generation, I know my particular generation would have been quite heavy-handed when we were small. You know, it was do as I say, not as I do. And if you misbehave, you're getting a hiding, do you know? And that's a lot of adversity that people go through. And it shapes the way that we are as adults. You know, everything we've been through as a child shapes where we are as adults. A lot of people have been through much more adversity than that. So they could have been through the foster system, in and out of care, in and out of care homes. They may have parents with mental health issues. There might be child carers. You know, there's a lot of things going on for people. And it's to, you know, when they're coming into a school environment or a adult centre, you know, we've had people coming on the course who worked in drug rehab, you know, and to see those as people and those behaviors as communication, and just go, look, what is it this person is trying to tell us? What has this person actually been through? And we don't say, you know, what's wrong with you? Because that's very blaming. We say, what's happened? What's happened to you? You know, and how can I help? And to be able to look at things through that trauma lens.
And really the power of lens there, even how I heard, you know, instead of saying, you know, what's wrong with you, what's happened, it feels totally different. You know, even when you think about it, because one way you're kind of straight away in the defensive mode, whereas the other is like, oh my God, you're actually concerned about me.
Yes.
Yeah, so I can see how the receiver. And Jeanette, who exactly is your customer, your client? So is it the child or the person, you know, or that could be transit, you know, grown into the adult that has the behavioral, you know, complexity, or that, or is it that you're educating those working with, you know, those that have you know, behavioral challenges?
Technically, it's the child, but I don't work directly with the child or with the person who has the behaviour challenges. As I said, it can be adults in rehab, people who have struggled with addiction for all their life, self-harming and things like that, you know. So technically, it's them, but in a roundabout way. So I am educating the workers that are going in so that they can be better prepared to work with those people. Because as a frontline worker myself for many years, now I'm only helping one person at a time. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to get into training, really, because I see all of the big staff turnover and I see how important it is that the people have somebody that's going to stay with them. And to be able to educate those people that are working with them, you know, so that they are providing the best level of care for the people that they serve.
And you're coming from a real position of caring. So how did TSK Academy come about then? Because obviously you said there that you're, you know, a frontline worker yourself, and you've, you know, firsthand experience of it all. And your wish was to hang on here instead of, you know, maybe working one-on-one, that you could help more people through education. When did the business idea, when was that aha moment? Said, you know what, I'm going into business in this, I'm going to create something here.
Well, I think it was, I actually decided to become a tutor before COVID happened. And I just started to get some work delivering QQI modules in healthcare for another company as a self-employed person. But I still had my other three part-time jobs. So I had four part-time jobs at the time, all doing, you know, frontline work. So in childcare, I was in childcare, I was in family support, and teaching and advocacy. I did some advocacy work as well for autistic adolescents who were in the system, needed to get their voices heard in court. So I was kind of, you know, doing all of that. And that's what I'd said to, people kept saying to me, why don't you, you should go into teaching. Can you do this? Can you do that? And the company that I was working for is actually Supervised Access Ireland is the company that I was working for, and I was doing some training for them. My boss had asked me if I could do some training because my report writing was very good, and that's what I trained the other staff in, report writing. And he gave me the courage really to design some courses, but I designed them for his particular company, for the staff. So basically, what is Supervised Access? You know, what is family reunification and parental alienation and things like that. So making those frontline workers aware of the challenges that those children and those families are actually going through when there's been a separation in the house. So that was kind of my aha moment, I suppose, was, you know, going, well, I'm actually helping more than just one person here. I'm helping, you know, 12 or 13 people as his staff team at the time. So then after that, I started doing the tuition for some healthcare tuition, and then COVID hit. I'd literally just given up my part-time jobs because I was working with Iona College, and they said to me, we have some work coming up for you now. We definitely have enough work for you, you know, during the day. And I was like, well, I'll take the leap of faith and I'll quit my jobs. And then COVID hit and I lost everything. So I had to diversify. Now, my first course, Behaviour Interventions and Understanding Complex Needs, had been in my head for, I'd say, the best part of a year, but I was doing research and things like that, and I was doing some tuition work for UCC here in Kilkenny. They have a campus here in Kilkenny. So I was a teaching assistant, a teaching assistant, the lecturer's assistant, basically teaching them Harvard referencing and things like that. And there were SNAs coming in to do the level 7 autism diploma. And I was doing some research and asking them guys, what's missing? What's missing from your QQIs? Well, you know, they're feeling the need that their QQI hasn't covered them, so they've gone on to do the level 7. And they're still feeling that there's something missing. So having never done the QQI before, because I have a level 8, I didn't need to do the QQI. I went back and I did my QQI special needs assistant for research purposes. And then my course was pretty much born then. Do you know, I put it up online. I did a basic outline of my learning objectives, my goals and objectives, and a basic outline of how I felt the modules were going to go. I put it up online and just put out on a group who'd be interested in a course covering these topics. And I got over 300 responses in 24 hours. Wow.
Now, if that isn't research, primary research, you know, of the highest degree, and I admire as well how you went back and you did a level which was, I won't say beneath you, do you know what I mean? You know, which you didn't need to do to get that understanding and to see what was missing. So you'd firsthand experience and knowledge of those gaps.
Yeah, absolutely. So from the experience and then going back and doing the qualification and going, well, you know, make no wonder people are leaving. Mm-hmm. So they're coming into this and they physically can't cope with it, because it's all well and good seeing all these things on how to manage a behavior written down on paper. But how do you change that? And a lot of us, when we read something, we forget what we read. Do you know, and when we go into the workplace environment, it's like, oh, what was it we were supposed to do in this situation? You know, or they might not even think that they've learned it.
And that's, you know, very interesting as well. The fact too that there was maybe such maybe a knowledge gap, as you kind of pointed out there, that would have had a detrimental effect on the level of staff turnover, you know. And as you said there, and it's something that's very striking, is that actually consistency is something that so many people with, you know, such challenges need and strive and cry out for, whereas the system doesn't appear to have been setting people up for that, setting employees up for that.
No, and that's it. I mean, even if you go and you do your degree, it still doesn't set you up for that. You can come into a workplace like that after just finishing your degree and, you know, you're seeing these behaviours happening over and over again. And especially if you're working in a non-verbal environment with non-speaking autistic people, you know, there can be a lot of behaviour challenges going on. And I would be like, where is the challenge? Is it you or is it them?
Right.
You know, and you have to kind of think along those lines as to go, do you know, is it me? Am I part of this? Mm-hmm. Am I part of the problem? You know, and you can be part of the problem or you can be part of the solution. And by turning around and saying to somebody, oh, they're engaging in this, so we're going to pin them down. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't. You know, restrictive practices are unfortunately still happening in a lot of workplaces. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't be, including in schools.
Yes.
You know. You know, and it really shouldn't be happening. If you get to the underlying reason behind a behavior, then you can tackle the reason and then the behavior won't happen. So the person is happy and then there's no need for any incident report forms or anything else, because, you know, we've got them to a happy place.
It's like a catch-22 scenario, isn't it? It's like the chicken and the egg. You know, and actually to knowing, you know, and I can just see from listening to you here, as I said, you know, being a mother and seeing and having witnessed, you know, similar behaviours as what you're saying there, Jeanette. And then when you bring other challenges in, such as, you know, the non-verbal type of communication and that into the mix, to be educated and have an awareness as the person, you know, working or dealing with the challenge is so, so important. How then, so when you set up anyway, you got the feedback that there was over 300 expressions of interest in your program. How have things evolved since then during COVID? Because it obviously, we're working in a very much a remote world.
Yeah. So I was chasing my tail, first of all, with that. I put it up there and then I kept getting comments and asking me, when is it starting? So I was like, I had to put a date on it. I hadn't even prepared anything at this stage, only goals and objectives, that was it. So I was chasing my tail from 1 week to the next. I turned around and was like, well, I'm going to have to put a date on it. So I said, right, it's starting in 2 weeks. I gave myself 2 weeks. I had 2 weeks to do module one and get it up and running. And then each week I was literally finishing things off as I was starting a class. So it's up and running now. It's been up and running since June 2020,
Excellent.
That particular course. we had then a teacher come on, and she took that course, and she'd obviously gone back to her school and said, you know, I've taken this course, but it wasn't really what they wanted. So I had the principal ring me and say, do you deal with trauma? And I was like, no, not really. This is where we're having behavior challenges from a particular child who doesn't have a diagnosis of anything, and we don't know how to deal with him. So our teacher came on and she did that course, but there was some benefit from it, but it wasn't tackling exactly what we needed, because the behavior interventions course is all basically neurological, you know, brain differences. Whereas this particular child was struggling because he's in and out of foster care and, you know, and those things. So that's when the trauma-informed care course was born. So I worked with that school, and we worked closely together to get the course up and running, and we did the whole school. So that was a fantastic experience. We did the whole school, and then we put that live. So that went live in March of last year.
It must be so satisfying to see the, you know, the positive outcomes, because it's really affecting people's lives, Jeanette, what you're doing. It's really empowering, you know, it's empowering both sides, both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. And the school, I actually contacted the school there earlier in the week, and I asked them how are things going now. So it was March since I delivered the course. I wondered how things were going. How was the young chap that we'd done the course for? And they said he still has some challenges, but he's in a much better place now, and they're manageable behaviours, whereas they weren't before, and they suspended him like two or three times, which isn't the answer. You know, I mean, you're suspending somebody, you're further traumatising them. So they said he was doing much better. He stays in school. There's a great relationship going on with them. And yes, he still has challenges from time to time, but sure, he's going to. He's a boy that's been through a lot of trauma, you know.
Right.
So it was brilliant to hear.
And no, it's that feedback, it's medicinal, isn't it? It spurs you on to achieve even more. So look, you set up the business literally nearly, you know, at the start of COVID. From a timing perspective, we all know that there's never a perfect time, but it was probably a very challenging time, to say the least. You know, when COVID hit, you know, what are some of the biggest lessons from a business perspective that you've learned since you set up TSK Academy?
Do you want to hear my mistakes?
Mistakes or lessons? Because lessons we learn from them.
Yeah, very valuable lessons. I've actually learned so much since I started this. I wouldn't be a business person. Like, I've never ran a business before. I've been a supervisor and assistant manager before, but you're answerable to somebody else. And at the end of the day, you're still doing as you're told. And you still don't know all of the ins and outs of everything. So, it came as a little bit of a shock to the system, to say the least. I've learned so much. I've learned about social media marketing and marketing generally. I've learned about networking. Didn't know that was a thing either. from yourselves, AIBF, doing the networks as and when I can get on. I'm also part of a women's network group here in Kilkenny, you know, so it's all, it's all valuable learning. And getting staff, I learned very quickly that I couldn't afford the four staff that I had, and I had to let people go. And that was actually, I think, my biggest heartbreak. I wept. I physically wept. And my lady that was working with me, Louise, she was actually here on the day. And I said, I wasn't going to do it over the phone. She was coming into me anyway. And I had to tell her that I had to let her go. She ended up comforting me rather than the other way around, because I was destroyed. I was absolutely destroyed. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I can't keep you on anymore. That was a big lesson for me, that managing my emotions around that kind of thing, being a boss is hard.
It is, I'll agree with you.
Being a business owner is hard, really hard. You watch other people running a business and you think it's easy, and you think they do nothing, and you think, oh my God, they're just getting all the money. And I see the money coming in, and when I look at the money coming in, I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Look what I've done in this time. And then I see the money going out, and it's an absolute shocking amount of money to be running a business, money that I never thought it could cost, because like I'm working from home essentially. I mean, mm-hmm. we built an office in the garden, mm-hmm. which I moved into in March this year. No, June this year. June mm-hmm. this year, I moved into this office. You know, but the amount of money that goes out. So this has been a really big learning curve for me. Having to take out a microfinance loan mm-hmm. Was a big shocker. And not running courses in August because I thought my staff were going to be off and they weren't. Mm-hmm. So then I had to pay them. I also had to pay holiday pays. And it's a big expense. It's a really big expense, but it's worth it.
Yeah. And the other side, we have to wear so many hats as business owners and business leaders.
Yes.
And whereby, you know, we might think that our area of expertise is in one area, you know, for yourself, it's, you know, the newer diversity and training side of things. But actually, you know, you have to be the accountant, you have to be the marketeer, you have to be the salesperson, you have to be so many people, you know, and to think of so many different things, you know. But obviously, Jeanette, you know, your passion is still coming through, you're shining. So what do you think will be your strengths that have like got you through this?
Empathy. I have massive empathy. I hadn't realized I had great leadership skills, but I keep being told I'm a great leader, so that's good. That definitely carries me through. Motivation. Mm-hmm. Passion. I'm definitely passionate. I want to make the world a better place, and I've always wanted to make the world a better place. From being a child and going through what I went through, and I'm from a trauma background myself, so you know, to go through all of what I went through as a child and to come out of it the other side with my head still firmly screwed on, or might not have always been, to be honest.
We're all allowed a few road bumps along the way.
my kids will debate that that's actually true, but my head is still screwed on. I'm not quite sure. They tell people I'm crazy, so I don't know about that. But the passion, yeah, to keep going, and I want to keep improving myself.
What do you do to keep improving yourself? What do you do to work on your own development and upskilling?
I'm actually doing a self-development course at the moment. It's online. It's like one day, one little thing every day that pops through onto my email. And, you know, it asks you about whether you're proactive, and being proactive instead of reactive, and how you can change that. You have to write a little diary every day on it, which I think is really good. It's helped me learn to say no.
I hear you there on that one. It's not as easy just spitting out two letters to the alphabet.
God, no, they're not easy at all, are they? And people will ask me, yeah, of course I can do that. And then from doing the personal development course, it's been a learning curve in that, oh my God, I actually do put my own things on the back burner so that I can help other people, to a detriment to myself. And then I'm fighting myself for deadlines and things like that. Mm. Why am I keeping saying yes to these people? Why don't I just say, I'm really sorry, I don't have time to do that right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, things like that I'm doing. I also managed to get a coach for free, which is fantastic.
Excellent.
So I'm helping them and they're helping me. So
it's great to have an accountability buddy. And I think for any of our listeners here today, that having a coach is just, it's so, so good, because, you know, when things are good, they're there for you. When things are bad, they're there for you. But just to have, you know, a rock or a partner in crime that is there, that has your best interest at heart, I think is so important. Yeah.
Yeah. I've only had one session with her so far, so we're waiting to see. I didn't know what a coach was. When I was asked what my idea of a coach was, I said the lad out on the football pitch that's screaming at my kids. that's who I thought was a coach, you know. Shouting at me, I don't want to know.
So Jeanette, what advice from your own experience now, and you've had a lot of, we call it fast-tracked experience over the last 2 years in particular, what advice from your experience would you give to another person who's thinking about maybe setting up their own business and wondering, is the timing right? Should I? Shouldn't I?
I think if you're thinking about setting up your own business, it means that you want to do something for yourself, in which case, do it. But be ready. Be very, very ready, because it is going to be a rocky road. There are going to be bumps. You are going to make mistakes. But if you're determined, you will get up and you will brush yourself off and you will keep going, which I'm doing. And I'm hoping next year now to break into consultancy and go down that road, so that I'm spreading the cheer a little bit further than just the people that are working on frontline. You know, we Brilliant. Want to get into the management, we wanted to get into the HR team, we want to make sure that it's coming up from the top down as well as from the bottom up.
Excellent. So your goal so for TSK Academy is to branch out more so as well as the training into the consultancy side. And who would you be consulting with? So if there's anybody listening there that can be able to identify with who you can work with.
So organisations, corporations, schools, institutions, you know, basically anybody that could potentially be or are already working with neurodiverse individuals and people with behaviour challenges. When we're looking at the educational institutions, we're looking at getting a whole school approach and basically that everybody's on the same page. So it's providing that consistency across the board and that all of the staff are trained. And then from an organisational perspective, we're looking at getting people from neurodiverse backgrounds or people who've been through challenges into the workplace environment. There's like 80% of neurodiverse individuals are either unemployed or underemployed, mm-hmm. which is massive. We're missing out on a huge cohort of extremely talented people that can do the job but can't do an interview. Or are afraid to apply for a position because in the position it says must be a good team player. Mm-hmm. My son, he's Asperger's and he would be one of those people. I'm not applying for that. He's not social. He don't like people. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean he can't do the job. And he's got OCD, so he's exceptionally talented in keeping everything neat and tidy. Do you know? So where is that person's talent? Where would they fit in well? To be able to do that job that person needs to fill. But we're not looking at the bigger picture because we're people who have been raised to believe that eye contact is important. It's a mark of respect. Eye contact is not important. If I'm not looking at you, I'm listening to you better. So we place massive emphasis on that in an interview. Or you don't have a very good firm handshake. Why is that so significant? Do you know, why aren't we saying, okay, I mean, COVID was brilliant for a lot of people who don't like touching anybody.
Yeah.
Do you know, I can come in here now and can say, hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. Fist pump or elbows slap, you know, and it means I don't actually have to physically touch you.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that's a very, very interesting perspective, you know, to think about it in those lines. So, Jeanette, it's no wonder from our conversation here this morning that you've recently been acknowledged as a Master Practitioner in Neurodiversity and Training from the All-Ireland Business Foundation. How does that make you feel and how has it helped you and your business?
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? It's a real proud moment to get that. I'm actually waiting for somebody in my house to take a picture of me so I can get it online. But, it's still in its wrapper, would you believe? Again, waiting for somebody to take a picture of me and for my husband to put it up on the wall. Absolutely huge proud moment, and it really does help your business, you know, to get that out there, to say, look, I have been recognized as a trusted company, I am focused on customer service and customer experience, you know, that I am professional, and for people to be able to see that and go, do you know, that's actually really good. It's a very prestigious award, to be fair. Mm-hmm.
And hard earned, and I think, you know, having experienced the life of a business owner, especially the last, you know, 2 years during a very challenging time, you've certainly risen above and beyond the bar, Jeanette. So now, Jeanette, just to give our listeners, I suppose, a bit of a more personal insight into into Jeanette herself, I'm going to throw just a few quick personal questions to you. Don't think too long and hard about it. Shout out the first thing that comes into your mind. Okay. Jeanette, what was your most cherished possession?
My dog.
Your dog.
Am I allowed to say my dog?
Well, I was going to say you can't say your family or friends, but look, we'll rock the dog.
But my most cherished possession after that would probably be my son's medallion. Which he got, he has not a medallion, it's a medal. He fought out in Afghanistan. He went out to Afghanistan twice. So he has a bravery medal from the army.
Oh, excellent. That's fantastic.
So it's not really mine, but I've stolen it. It's in my office.
I know, yeah, claim part of that. If you could send some advice back in time to your 20-year-old self, what would you say?
Don't let people get inside your head.
That's deep there. Yeah, that's heavy. I can hear that one. I think I'll have to let that one sit with me for a few minutes.
Spent a lot of years of self-doubt, so do you know, To get people out of that space. Don't let people get inside your head.
After all, it is your space, isn't it? Tell us something that most people wouldn't know about you, Jeanette.
I'd often say, okay, yeah, what most people don't know about me is that there's 11 kids between myself and my husband.
Wow.
We have
fantastic. Excellent. So you have good Christmases and you've good family times, which is great. If you could have a dinner party and invite any four people, who would you invite?
It would have to be Morgan Freeman, Elvis Presley, Abraham Lincoln, and Pink.
Ah, good stuff. A real huge diversity in there. So you're walking the walk and talking the talk here today. And just to finish up, if you had a motto in life, what would it be?
Walk in your own footprints.
I like it, Jeanette. Jeanette, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you here this morning. I know that I've certainly learned an awful lot, but one thing you've instilled in me now is a real sense of curiosity and curiosity to learn more. So I know that thank you so much for opening my mind, the mind of our listeners, to how we can embrace newer diversity and inclusion in our own lives, but also in the workplace as well, which I think is very, very important because there's an awful lot of opportunity there, I think, from both parties. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, Jeanette, how can they do that?
Okay, they can go onto my website at trainingsolutionskilkenny.com or my email is info@trainingsolutionskilkenny.com. The landline here is 056-781-9111.
Brilliant. Jeanette, thank you so much
for
talking to us. And I look forward to catching up with you in the near future as well. Take care.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
Thank you for listening to AIBF Business Talk today. I really do hope you enjoyed listening in. To find out more about the All-Ireland Business Foundation and the work that we do, especially the Business All-Stars programme, just go to www.aibf.ie. Remember, never put off until tomorrow what you can do today. Until next time, from your host, Elaine Carroll. Goodbye.